mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Sarah Silverman considers him one of her favorite comedians of all time. Jim Gaffigan said he is the funniest person he knows, and Patton Oswalt describes him as a human hurricane and comedic force of nature. Although he's been performing stand-up since 1982, Todd Glass made his boldest move in the business when he came out publicly as gay on comedian Mark Maron's podcast WTF in January of 2012.
What's up, Todd?
How you doing?
No, I just wanted to come on and promote my podcast.
Oh,
Glass Show.
I had no idea that's what we were doing.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. What did you think?
Oh, I thought you were gay.
Oh, are you shitting me?
Yeah, is that weird?
Oh, my God,
I'm
no.
Sorry.
Did you really think that?
Yeah.
Why?
Because we had these phone calls.
All right, let's cut the here. Yeah.
A year and a half has passed since that groundbreaking moment, and Todd Glass writes about it in his new book, The Todd Glass Situation, a bunch of lies about my personal life and a bunch of true stories about my 30-year career in stand-up comedy. Todd Glass, thrilled to have you with us on Word of Mouth.
Oh, it's good to be here.
At the beginning of this book, you write about suffering a heart attack. You're backstage at a comedy club. You were 45 years old then. You tried to fix yourself by quitting smoking and losing weight. You actually waited 2 years to come out publicly. So what, if not that, finally drove you to do it?
Well, you would think that the heart attack did it, but, I thought it would. You know, I realized when the heart attack happened, I thought 2 days afterwards I would start being much more honest in a quicker way, not 1 year telling people. When I was in the ambulance, I yelled out to Sarah Silverman because I knew she had to call the person I had been in a relationship with for a long time, but I didn't want to say a guy's name. So I yelled out and I went, Sarah, call Andrea. Andrea. And she knew Andrea was code for Chris. Mm-hmm. And I remember there, even laying there while having a heart attack going, this is so pathetic. It's so pathetic. Even a little bit laughing at myself because, you know, if it's pathetic, it can sometimes be funny, especially if you're aware of it. And I went, What am I doing? And then it took me about a year and a half after that to finally go, okay, it's time to like just be honest about who I am. And of course, life, I didn't know it would get better, but it got better. It did get much better. It's like that weight off the shoulders. You think you know what that means. You're like, oh yeah, weight off your shoulders. You have something on your mind. You get it off. But once it happens, it's like, oh my God, this feels so much better.
Mark writes the introduction to your new book and says he didn't suspect at all. I mean, he had no idea. And many people didn't. You told a handful of people, maybe 15 people, your family, your close friends. Nobody suspected.
Well, my close friends knew, you know, like even if I didn't tell them, but people around me all the time, like a lot of comedians, I know they were, and they didn't care. And I think there's a lot of people from a loving place that might say something like from a loving place, but also confused, like, what, why is he hide it? Nobody cares. Mm. Know that a lot of those people, including me, knew that inwardly, but we didn't start hiding today. For me, it started when I was 13 years old, and then the lie perpetuates and perpetuates, and at one point, you get comfortable in the lie.
Mm. In your act, you even fabricated a girlfriend. Here's a clip of one of your jokes. This is from the 2008 Just for Laughs Gala in Montreal.
My neighbor smells. My girlfriend wants me to tell him he smells, but I don't want to hurt his feelings. She goes, tell him creatively. And how is that? What do you say creatively? You go, hey, is your ass backed up? Chew the nail. Now your ass isn't backed up. That's cool. Are you sure? No?
So aside from the fake girlfriend, how authentic was that? Was it drawn from a real experience?
So I love the way you asked that question because most people just say to me in interviews, oh, that's so sad that you had to make up a girlfriend and make up a story. And I go, whoa, I made up that it was a girl, but I didn't make up the story, which indirectly prove something, which I never thought I was out proving it, but I did. You know, people wonder, what is the difference between same-sex relationships versus, guy-girl, guy-guy? What's the difference, you know? There is no difference, because every time I told those stories on stage, I was in a relationship with a guy, But when I switched it and told it to audiences, never once did they go, that's weird, because it's the same exact thing. The only way the audience would have figured it out that was different if I said, you know, like, you know, I was in the bathroom at the airport and I was going to the bathroom next to my girlfriend. And they'd be like, wait a second, what airport bathroom does this guy use?
Well, I guess the reading your book, I really enjoyed reading about your early life. I wanted to say you moved, I think, 5 times in 8 years or maybe 8 times in 5 years. I may have that.
Yeah, we moved
up
a lot.
But that gave me some perspective on the outsider. You were dyslexic, ADHD. You were Jewish in these predominantly WASPy neighborhoods and gay. So you must have grown up thinking, wow, I'm just out of it on all counts.
You know what? I don't want to make it look like woe is me, because I had a really good life. My parents were awesome. My people that surrounded me. I'm not trying to get up on a podium, and because I do a lot of wrong things in my life and I make a lot of mistakes. But where I try to be decent, I guess it comes from sitting around so long and hearing people not say anything. And we lived in a neighborhood where I would hear people make like sort of homophobic comments, and they weren't egregious. They weren't like F this group or F that group. They were like things at a dinner table or the Thanksgiving dinner table, and nobody said anything.
Well, you said a lot when you were growing up, apparently, talking all the time, entertaining your teachers, started performing stand-up in high school. Was there a moment when you thought, I'm going to be a comedian, that's it?
Well, comedy for me, and I like all types of comedy, like some silly comedy growing up, hearing Steve Martin did it for me. But I also like comedy that is social, he has something to say, or politically. And for comedians, that was what I understood. When George Carlin talked about it, I got it. So I always really loved stand-up comedy. And then when I was in high school, we started going to this club. Now, a lot of the guys like that I'll mention now, they weren't as famous as they are now. But we would go see people at this place called the Comedy Works. We'd see like Jerry Seinfeld, Gary Shandling, Paul Reiser, Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, you know, Richard Lewis, Gilbert Gottfried. The list would just go Stephen Wright, Eddie Murphy, Roseanne Barr. So I saw a lot of really good comedy, and I loved it. I mean, I didn't just like it. I'm not exaggerating, fell in love with stand-up comedy. I went every single week, and then I heard those infamous words. Hey, if you think you're funny, Wednesday night's open mic night. And there it all started.
I'm speaking with the stand-up comedian Todd Glass. He's been in the business for more than 30 years and regularly appears on shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live. In 2012, he shook the comedy world when he came out publicly as gay on the WTF podcast. We're talking with him about his new book, The Todd Glass Situation. Stand-up comedy requires risk-taking. You deal with hecklers and rejection and instability of life on the road. On top of that, you started comedy in the early 80s. Now, this is right when the AIDS crisis hit the U.S. Homophobia and misinformation about how it was spread was just rampant at that time. How did you deal with that in your circles, both on stage and off?
You know, that's why I'm very careful in the jokes that I make today. You know, in comedy, I think a lot of times when I speak about comedy, some people misunderstand me. And I hope this leads back to answering your question, which I think it will. As far as, like, you don't want to offend people. Look, you have to offend people. You just hope you're offending the right people. But back then, there were a lot of jokes about just, you know, about AIDS and about, you know, can you imagine two guys? And, man, it did not help. Plus, the way people threw around the word, you know, gay, gay, faggot, gay, and all instead of saying lame. So then you have to say to yourself later, like, I have to come out, and a word that I've heard used as lame for 25 years, think just lame, lame, gay, gay, gay. Now you have to tell people I'm gay. So, you know, yeah, back then it was very scary to, as a comedian, it did not lead a path for me to come out. So again, going back to your original question, you know, like, that's why it was hard, you know, when a lot of people go, what's he afraid of? Hey, go back to 1982. That's where I started, you know, really being in the closet.
Mm-hmm. And being backstage with people and having conversations about, would you drink out of the same glass as a gay person drank out of?
Yeah. And by the way, that conversation was not from a bunch of morons. I remember hearing those conversations, and it was from pretty evolved people that were confused about it. Hey, they had to have the conversation, but I heard that. And that really went, oh, my God, like, that really penetrated. And it really made me, you know, just say, OK, this is not something I want to share with anybody.
Well, here's one of your friends and a very evolved person, Louis C.K. This is from a 2008 routine. Just want to warn listeners that he does use some of those barbed words we were just speaking to Todd about.
I miss that word, you know. I grew up saying that word, and it never meant gay. When I was a kid, I didn't know what gay was. No, I hadn't been told that people do that. I had no idea. Faggot didn't mean gay. When I was a kid, you call somebody faggot because they're being a faggot, you know?
Louis C.K. from his 2008 stand-up special called Chewed Up. Listening to that clip from Louis C.K., now you admit that even you have a hard time saying the word gay. Why is that?
Yeah, well, I'm a very big Louis C.K. fan, and I understand what he's saying about that joke, and I don't know if I totally disagree with it. It's where you take it from that point on. I think when some people hear that joke, they might misunderstand that he's saying it's okay to use it. And I'm not sure exactly what he's saying, but when somebody uses a word as an adjective, like, you know, someone's being as an adjective, it's that simple. Instead of saying clumsy, some people say retarded. And you're like, no, just use the adjective. Don't make someone's being a negative adjective. You have to see how that's bad. I don't think they did anything wrong. And it's a funny way I'm saying it, but it'll make a twist. Nobody using the word gay as an adjective did anything wrong at all. But once someone makes you privy to that word does have a path to causing someone pain, you didn't think it did. That's why you didn't do anything wrong. But now once someone makes you aware of it, yeah, I was a 12-year-old kid. And if you have your headphones on or you're listening to this interview right now and you can't say to yourself, oh, I guess that would suck that your being meant lame. That your being, and I'm repeating it, meant lame. If you can't go inward and go, oh, I didn't know it and I didn't do anything wrong, but now I do know it and I choose to keep using that word, I really do wonder about that person because I don't know how to rattle you out of saying that word. You know, if what I just said doesn't make you go, oh, that makes total sense. I'm going to stop that.
Some of the best comedy does require rigorous, unguarded honesty. I think about Richard Pryor, you know, joking about setting himself on fire while freebasing cocaine, or Louis C.K. talking about raising kids as a single parent. Now, do you think remaining closeted kept you from being truly funny? And in other words, was there a part of you censoring yourself?
At first, I thought it didn't. I thought, well, I'm not honest about my relationships, but I am honest about so many other things, and I don't talk about relationships that much. But then afterwards, I realized, yes, it did, because I would keep anything out of my act that wasn't perceived to be manly. I like lighting a certain way when I go into a room. I don't like it light. I like it dark. I don't like cooking because I don't have the patience, but I like the look of a set table. I like the look of when you're having a big dinner and there's like 15 people and it's set. I set the table the night before. I used to be afraid to talk about that on stage because I thought, well, that doesn't seem manly. So maybe, hey, look, I'll be confident. Maybe I was a good comic, but I can take it to another level now. You know, the more honest you are on stage, yes, obviously that's what makes a better comic.
Well, Todd Glass, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
You know what? It was a very enjoyable conversation. I appreciate you having me on.
Todd Glass's new book is called The Todd Glass Situation, a bunch of lies about my personal life and a bunch of true stories about my 30-year career in stand-up comedy. For those who'd like to hear more from Todd, you can find a link to his podcast. It's called The Todd Glass Show, and we've got a link at wordofmouthradio.org.